The House Resources Committee meeting is called to order. No one present to my left. Representative, Co-Chair Newman, Wilson, Seaton, and Tuck. And there are a lot of people to my left, by the way. Today we have before us Resolution Day. We're going to resolve everything. HCR 28, opposed restrictions for offshore drilling. HCR 10, federal control of state land and waters. And HCR 28, state sovereignty. So this is Free Alaska Day on Alaska Day. So this is our theme. So we're, and Representative Olson has joined us. With that, staff to Representative Johnson, would you come forward and present HJR 28? Identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is John Bittner. I'm staff to Representative Johnson. I'd like to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify on behalf of HJR 28 today. In order to understand the issues that led to the drafting of this resolution, a brief explanation of the history of OCS drilling is necessary. In 1953, Congress passed the Submerged Lands Act, which granted individual states the right to natural resources on submerged lands up to 3 miles off of shore. It also reaffirmed federal claims to all resources on lands submerged on the Outer Continental Shelf, consisting of the lands from that 3 mile marker onward to about 200 miles, with a few exceptions. The passage of the Submerged Lands Act led to the passage of the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act later in 1953, outlining the federal responsibilities over these lands and authorizing the Secretary of the Interior to lease those lands for resource development. In the 60s and 70s, an emergent environmentalist movement resulted in the passage of the National Environmental Policy Act, the creation of the EPA in 1970, and the establishment of the Clean Air Act in 1972. These and other related bills created the core of the regulatory framework currently applicable to all extractive industries. During the 1980s, various area-specific moratoriums on OCS drilling were passed by Congress, and during this time, petroleum revenues dropped markedly for a variety of reasons. By 1990, the bans on drilling had encompassed so much of the U.S. exclusive economic zone that a blanket moratorium was on most areas was enacted by the president. In 2008, President Bush rescinded the presidential moratorium on OCS drilling, removing one of the major roadblocks to that OCS exploration. And in October of 2008, Congress followed suit and rescinded their ban on OCS leasing, allowing the Mineral Services Division to start the process of offering OCS land up for lease. The MMS estimates that about 574 million acres of the U.S. Outer Continental Shelf are currently off limits, representing about 85% of OCS acreage offshore in the lower 48. Estimated resources in the banned areas are 17.8 billion barrels of oil and 76.5 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, and these estimates are considered to be fairly conservative. A recent Northern Economics report commissioned by the Shell Oil on economic impacts of OCS development here in Alaska projects that roughly 35,000 jobs will be created in the state over the 50-year period of OCS development and exploration that they were examining. Those jobs represent a combined payroll of $72 billion. During petroleum revenue, direct petroleum revenue to the state is estimated at around $5.8 billion, the majority of which will be directly impacted local governments through property taxes. Due to recent comments and actions made by Interior Secretary Salazar and President Obama, the future of OCS drilling and exploration has been cast into doubt. President Obama has chosen to delay the lifting of the presidential moratorium on OCS drilling, and Secretary Salazar has expressed an interest in closing or severely limiting OCS exploration and drilling in areas of the lower 48 in favor of an as-yet-uncrafted comprehensive energy plan. This kind of uncertainty adversely affects potential exploration and development in these areas. Especially in economically uncertain times like these, companies can't afford to risk huge sums of capital trying to develop a resource unless they have a reasonable guarantee that their investment will be secure for the future, for the short-term future. To that effect, HJR 28 sends a clear message to the President, Secretary Salazar, and the U.S. Congress that they should pass no laws or administrative orders restricting OCS drilling and exploration in Alaska or the continental U.S., and it further urges them to encourage offshore drilling exploration and drilling. And I would urge your support for this resolution.
Before any questions, Representative Bettenberg has joined us, and Representative Kawasaki is online. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned the moratorium that's been placed on further exploration. Have other states come up with resolutions similar to House Joint Resolution 28 in opposition to this or question it, or what has happened around the rest of the America on this?
There's been a pretty broad support among several states for this type of for OCS drilling. It sort of really took hold during the recent energy crisis, where oil was and gasoline was pretty expensive, and we were looking for alternative sources of petroleum. I do know I don't have any specific resolutions to offer to you from different states, but I do know that a large number of the Congress has come together and urged President Obama to support OCS drilling. They've passed their own resolution on a national level to support this OCS drilling, as opposed to what they're currently considering.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I was wondering why the restriction to within 50 miles instead of the entire OCS that we have economic control over?
For our personal, for this particular resolution, we're looking at the resources in Alaska, and most of the OCS resources that are currently considered for development are within the 50-mile range, is my understanding. But I think we have several members of other organizations, resource-related organizations, that will probably be able to speak on that a little more fully.
We do have Director of the Oil and Gas Association and the Resource Development Corporation to speak to that, but that was the primary reason for the 50 miles, is we're looking at an Alaskan resolution, not a nationwide, so kind of stick it to what we know, and as we're not a signatory to the Laws of the Sea Treaty, we wanted to keep it pretty close in terms of that. So that's my input. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out, we have the 200-mile limit that we're currently using in law, and I didn't know if we have a separate, any designation of a 50-mile zone, and that was my curiosity.
Emergency, we do not, but it is what we're looking at now with some of the shell things and the Chukchi and the Beaufort. I think that's the number that they're looking at, and that's the area I want to address with Salazar when he's actually in town mid-April. That's kind of the reason we're getting this. We'd like to have that to present to him when he's in town mid-April. Any other? Representative Newman.
Just on that point, Mr. Chair, I find it interesting, too, that we had representatives from communities along the Aleutian Chain in Juneau this year that were highly in support of offshore drilling out in there in the platforms because of the amount of jobs that it creates. They feel that it can be safely done. Those are the people that are living there that have looked at this for quite a while, out in the Bristol Bay region, too. So just on that point.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just back on that other point, on page 2.
On the 50-mile point?
On the 50-mile point. Page 2, line 31, says, beginning in the 30, and production in federal and state waters around Alaska, the outer continental shelf within 50 miles of shore and continuing on, and elsewhere in the continental United States. Does that expand this resolution beyond Alaska's interest by having that last part in there?
It expresses support for outer continental drilling, specifically for Alaska as the focus, but we do have provisions in this resolution that would allow it to support it in the continental United States as well.
Yep. Representative Tuck, I think we're hoping that other states will support us as well, is the logic behind it. When Texas does theirs or California does theirs, hopefully they'll include Alaska. Mm-hmm. Follow up, Representative Tuck?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just remember when we were trying to get the hydro as part of renewable energies, we were trying to really focus on Alaska just so we can, you know, make sure that if anything was going to be passed, that the other states don't hold us up from protecting our own best interest up here in Alaska. So I just want to make sure that the same thing applies, that we're speaking for ourselves. Our situation might be a little bit different than some of the drilling communities down in the lower 48, ensuring that again, Alaska's interest isn't tied to a whole conglomerate of other interests going on lower 48. So that was my only concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have a question on that same subject, and I don't know what the chances are of us joining the land of, how is it worded, the land...
Laws of the sea.
But many, I mean, in there, it's 200 miles, isn't it? And why would we start off with 50? Wouldn't we want to kind of, so that it would kind of mesh with anything else that might happen? And in the lower 48, the states that we're trying to support, they probably all wanted 200 miles.
Representative Wilson, I'd certainly, as far as I'm concerned, offshore drilling anywhere we can relieve our independence and foreign oil would be fine with me, and I certainly wouldn't have any opposition to amending it to 200 miles. So, but this was designed to encompass the issues that are before us now with the lease sales that are out there right now, not forecasting as to what we're going to have happen with the, you know, the 200 mile limit and the laws of the sea. And I think what we don't want to do is have Canada, the Soviet Union, everyone else come out opposing our resolution because we technically don't have that jurisdiction as not being signatories to that treaty. So, but I'd be happy to entertain. I further the better for me. Representative Gutenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm delighted we care about what other states care about these days. In drafting the resolution, did you run across anything that might be in the state's state's interest to not develop? I mean, everything from gooey ducks to something I don't even know about, or there are places where we don't want to do it for reasons.
I'm sure there are. I specific sites along those lines. No, since I don't know the combination of biology and potential petroleum reserves. I do know that before you can receive, I'm sorry, through the chairman, Representative Gutenberg, before you can receive a lease, and even after the lease has been issued, significant environmental impact studies and biologic impact studies have to be performed, usually running into thousands of pages, sort of considering all different aspects of impact of OCS drilling on almost anything you can imagine. And they take that into account when they offer these leases and when they allow you to do the drilling.
Any additional questions before we go to public testimony?
Yeah,
Representative Tuck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. At one time, local communities had a lot to weigh in on the coastal management plan. This resolution won't affect if somehow we decide to let them participate again once before, right? Because we're speaking to the president, we're speaking to the Department of Interior and everything else, so that wouldn't limit the state re-implementing a plan to allow local coastal communities to play a part.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, not as I understand it. This is specifically for a very specific federal issue that's come up really fairly recently, back in February. With the acceptances of Secretary Salazar as the Interior Secretary of the Interior, and that's pretty much all we deal with here is his and the administration's view and the Congress's view on OCS drilling in Alaska.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck, also a resolution is nothing more than us communicating our wishes in terms of the effect it has. It has exactly the impact that the people reading it wish it to have. There's no legal standing for it. Someone to come back, someone might at some point say, well, at that point you thought here, but the as circumstances change, it wouldn't affect the coastal management plan whatsoever. With that, we're going to go to public testimony. Offline, we have Jason Bruni and Marilyn Crockett. Jason, would you state your name for the record and who you represent and begin your testimony, please?
Chairman Johnson, Chairman Newman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jason Bruni, and I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council. Today I'm testifying in support of HJR 28. I'd like to thank you for introducing it, and a little bit about RDC. RDC is a statewide, nonprofit, membership-funded organization founded in 1975. The RDC membership is comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fisheries industries, as well as Alaska Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms. RDC's purpose is to link these diverse interests together to encourage a strong, diversified private sector in Alaska and expand the state's economic base through the responsible development of our natural resources. Oil and gas resources located in the outer continental shelf out to 200 miles are vital to the economic viability of a gas pipeline to the lower 48 and the continued operation of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. Indeed, an additional 15 trillion cubic feet of natural gas must be discovered for either the Trans-Canada or Denali pipeline projects to be economically viable over the long term. In addition, throughput in TAPS continues to decline from 2.1 million barrels of oil per day in the late 80s to one-third of that today. This trend can be reversed with production from the OCS, where we should be encouraging development, not hampering it. No one has more care for the environment than Alaskans, and OCS development has a strong track record. It has coexisted with other industries, including fishing, in Cook Inlet, the North Sea, and the Gulf of Mexico. Energy exploration, development, and production in federal and state waters around Alaska will occur in an environmentally sensitive and responsible manner, overseen by the strongest of regulatory regimes. When necessary, seasonal operating restrictions and mitigation measures to avoid conflicts with other resource users will be employed. Given the nation will remain heavily reliant on oil and gas development for decades, America must harness the significant energy resources beneath its most promising onshore and offshore oil and gas basins. It is important to take into consideration, when formulating public policy, that for every barrel of oil America refuses to develop domestically, it will have little choice but to import an equal amount from overseas, where weaker environmental regulations often apply. As I've often said, think globally, develop locally. With the high impact high energy prices have on Americans and their economy, the U.S. has a moral obligation to develop domestic energy sources, and the OCS is the ideal location. The resources located in the OCS will buy us the time we need to develop the alternative and renewable energy resources that will someday break our reliance on foreign oil. I'd also like to comment a little bit on some of the discussion that transpired a little bit ago. The leases that are currently held in the Chukchi exist between 60 and 120 miles offshore. The Beaufort Sea is up to 25 miles, and in the prospective area of the North Aleutian Basin, those areas are likely up to 25 miles out as well. Upon passage of this resolution, I highly encourage members of this committee to present this testimony before the Secretary Salazar on April 14th at his hearing in Anchorage. I think it's imperative that Alaskans rally for this and show up in force. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I strongly urge the committee to vote in favor of this resolution. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Jason, did I hear, I think, in your testimony that you would be in support of changing the 50-mile number to 200-mile number in this resolution?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Johnson, I would be supportive of that.
Thank you. Representative Wilson, do you have a question as well?
That's what I was
okay, no, that was the same question. Any other questions for Jason? Okay, thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. Stand on the line just in case. You do have a lot of information here. Marilyn Crockett, are you available?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Would you
please? Is Marilyn Crockett. I am the executive director of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, which, as all of you know, is a trade association for the oil and gas industry here in Alaska. Thanks very much for the chance to testify in support of HJR 28. Passage of this resolution will send an important message to the president and lawmakers in the nation's capital that Alaska recognizes the role that this state can play in securing critical domestic energy supplies. An energy plan for the nation will absolutely need to include Alaska since this state has over 30% of the nation's technically recoverable resources. In the offshore alone, the MMS estimates that Alaska's OCS contains an estimated 27 billion barrels of oil and 132 trillion cubic feet of natural gas resources. Furthermore, specifically for the Chukchi Sea Basin, it's been characterized as the most promising and materially undeveloped offshore petroleum basin in the U.S. So clearly, Alaska can play a very, very critical role in terms of the nation's energy supply. As mentioned by staff to Chairman Johnson during the presentation on the bill, there are a number of positive effects on the economies not only of the nation, but Alaska as well. He spoke to the Alaska positive impact in terms of jobs, payroll, and revenue. I will add to that that recent studies in the lower 48 on OCS development also indicates $1.3 trillion could be generated for federal, state, and local governments, as well as 160,000 jobs. So clearly, the national OCS, the offshore areas of the nation, and specifically in Alaska as well, plays a very critical role for the nation's energy supply and for future development in Alaska. The oil and gas industry, as you know, has already spent billions of dollars for the rights to explore and develop these resources in some of the OCS areas off of Alaska. While there are many challenges facing development in the state, such as harsh operating climate, remote location, and so on, there are some steps that can be taken to reduce the other challenges, such as access restrictions and so on. HJR 28 accomplishes this latter objective, and we encourage the committee to pass it out of committee today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Marilyn? Tom Lackish, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in Anchorage, would you state your name for the record and commence your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Lackish. I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a victim of the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and although I have no beef at all with gas exploration and production in the offshore, I do have some very grave concerns with oil spill prevention and response that is still wholly inadequate, particularly in ice-bearing waters and in our extreme sea states. I've been extensively studying oil spill prevention and response technologies ever since the Exxon Valdez, and even came up with some designs that would be more effective, much more effective in high seas and broken ice and in Arctic conditions. And when I took that technology to a conference attended by BP, the experts that were at the meeting in 2003 oil and ice conference, all agreed that the technology I was proposing for use in Alaska waters would be effective and I wouldn't even need R&D, just a little engineering. But when Nick Glover of BP was directly confronted with the prospect of having to get improved oil spill response, he responded that, in fact, he didn't need better spill response because DEC gave them an exemption from the oil spill response planning standards when there was more than 10% ice on the water. And so this, to me, seems to be highly irresponsible. Neither the MMS, the USCG, or DEC use the industry accepted standards of ASTM F-1780 for calculating spill response capability, and so we are now at least 10 years behind the times of the standard for evaluating oil spill response effectiveness. And so if this bill is designed to promote the status quo with ineffective and inefficient oil spill response, I must wholly object to it. I would request that you change the language in the resolution to exclude improved oil spill prevention and response from any restrictions, quote unquote, that the state or federal government may impose on offshore development, because I would hate to think that the legislators in this committee would violate the constitutional right to reasonable concurrent use of Alaska's resources, which subsistence has the highest priority, and would be adversely affected by the present state of oil spill regulation, which is totally ineffective at preventing damage to our superior public use of subsistence resources. Oil spills are illegal. They can never be a superior public purpose. They must be, regulatory standards must be improved to the current state of engineering technology, and I would request that you amend the bill to exempt oil spill regulation from the quote-unquote restrictions that you seek to prevent from being imposed. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I would like to answer any questions on any specific technology questions regarding oil spill response in Arctic conditions, as I've extensively studied this topic.
Tom, thank you, and I'm not sure that's not a topic for a different subject or a different time, but this bill does say safe and responsible exploration, and it's not a bill, it's a resolution. I want to clarify that. So I think that this doesn't exempt anyone from oil spill requirements. I made a note here because I do want to check on the exemption of 10% ice. If that's the case, I'm sure we'll hear something about that before this committee in the not too distant future. Any questions for Tom? Yes, Representative Seaton, please.
Thank you. Do you have your testimony written by chance that you could send?
No, I just got in off the plane. I was stuck in Seattle for a couple days. I just happened to turn on your committee and see this. But this is near and dear to my heart, and I would like to converse with you directly at your office if you have the time to explain exactly the impediments to effective oil spill recovery in both Arctic conditions and in high seas that are not being properly addressed by either DEC, the MMS, or the Coast Guard.
Thank you, Tom. And if you'd get with Representative Seaton or myself, I can pass that information on, because none of us want to do anything to damage the environment. And if we have the technology out there to do it right, we should be doing it. Thank you. Any other questions for Tom? Thank you, Tom. Is there anyone else online to testify? Okay, is there anyone in the room who'd like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, Representative Seaton, regarding public testimony?
Yes. Is Jason Burns?
Jason, are you still online? Bruni? Jason Bruni?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am.
Yeah, I think Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Thank you, and I was curious on the language on page 2, lines 21, where it says the United States Outer Continental Shelf. If the 50 miles is eliminated so that we, whatever the United States controls, whether it's before or after the law of the sea, right now currently it'd be 200 miles, but we could extend 150 miles beyond that if Congress takes actions, and then this would still remain appropriate. Would that satisfy where you're coming from as far as wanting to make sure that we don't restrict this and have it as open as possible to the lands that we control on the outer continental shelf?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I believe that that location, as well as the line 4 on the first page, where it references 50 miles as well, changing that to the up to the 200-mile exclusive economic zone that is defined, generally 3 to 200 miles. But Representative Seaton, you are correct that there are areas that our jurisdiction does not extend that far, given other nations that border us.
Thank you, Mr. Burns.
Okay. And I think that we will probably be looking at some kind of amendment on that. Any other questions? Any other one to testify in the audience? Hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony. That brings us to committee discussion. Representative Seaton. I'm sorry, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment that would be listed as amendment number 1 to page 1, line 4, changing the number 50 to 200. And on page 2, line 21, changing the number 50 to 200. So they would read 200 miles.
Is everyone clear on the amendment? We're basically changing 50 miles to 200 miles. Representative Wilson?
If he would take that amendment just a little bit further.
Page 2, line 31.
Yeah, line 31.
Is everyone clear on it? That is line page 1, line 4, changing 50 to 200. Line 21, page 2, 50 to 200. and line 31, page 2, 50 to 200. Representative Seaton.
And just objecting for discussion.
Okay, there is an objection.
And the question relates to another action we took earlier about extending or supporting the United States to extend its jurisdiction up to 150 miles further in the Arctic and quite a bit further potentially in the Gulf of Alaska as well. And I'm wondering whether we want to restrict it to the 200 miles or whether we want to say the continental shelf controlled by the United States. And Mr. Chairman, I'm just bringing it up. I'm willing to do whatever the co-chairs desire on this. It's just that if the thought is that if the Congress enacts the bill that they currently have before them, then we would have extended jurisdiction beyond 200 miles, but this resolution would be a limit of out to 200 miles, and I'm not sure that that's the intention to limit it to 200 miles.
Representative Seaton, would not be my intention on that amendment, and I just made a note here of within 200 miles of the continental shelf or 200 miles, whichever is greater. So this is it your understanding that the laws of the sea would go potentially 150 miles beyond the outer continental shelf, or if the continental shelf extended more than 200 miles?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Seaton. If the continental shelf extends beyond 200 miles, then under the laws of the seas, we could extend our jurisdiction out beyond 200 miles. So,
but only to the outer continental shelf?
Only to the outer continental shelf. So the United States continental shelf would cover anything that we could control 200 miles and beyond. So whichever language, just for committee discussion, I thought I wanted to bring it up.
Representative Bettenberg.
Mr. Chair, is somebody on from oil and gas?
We have some the Oil and Gas Association, but we do not have anyone from the oil and gas. We have Division of Land and Water on the next bill and Special Assistance for DNR, but we do not have anyone from oil and gas on this particular bill. There's no one online for oil and gas.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, maybe from the administration or some offshore experts, tell us about the difference between jurisdictions and what we're getting into when we're expanding out to 250 or defining the OCS or.
And Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not at all wanting to throw a monkey wrench into this. I agree with the extension to 200 miles. It's just that we've been dealing with other things that would extend that jurisdiction beyond that. One of the main reasons why we're looking at that is because of the oil and gas resources in there. But if it's at all confusing, I'm perfectly willing to withdraw the objection. It's just for discussion.
Representative Seaton, I think at this point, because the laws of the sea has not been ratified, we are looking at this resolution being presented to Mr. Salazar in the next couple of weeks. The 200 miles is our what we have right now to deal with, and I think we left it at that. Once again, because of the where we are in today's history, and we're not going, I don't want to do this resolution on what we may have in the future. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly my thought on this, too, is let's deal with what we've got on the table today. We don't know what future legislation may be coming out forward, at the federal level. This resolution deals with what we have in our plate today. We can always adapt to that, but this resolution deals with what we're dealing with today. That'll extend out to further. That's just, to me, it's keep up what we got. We don't know what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree with that, Representative Seaton. And if you choose to withdraw your objection, that would be okay. But we can vote on it or change it or whatever. I have no. But I think we ought to deal with the laws that we deal with today. And if we want to do another resolution on the laws of the sea, which we've already done, would be appropriate as well.
And Mr. Chairman, I objected for discussion. I'm not offering an amendment to the amendment.
Okay, I understand that.
But I thought that it was good to get the discussion so that the legislative history is that we're not intending to the 200 mile to be a maximum limit, that we want to go out to the continental shelf that we control, which is currently 200 miles.
Right. And I appreciate that. And I think it is on the record now. So.
Yes, and I'd withdraw my.
So the objection has been withdrawn to amendment number one. Is there any other objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one passes. That brings the resolution before us. Before you leave, Mr. You never know. There may be questions. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, if there is no more further discussion, I would make a motion to move this bill.
I would entertain that if there's no. Representative Tuck.
Object. I'm sorry.
There is objection.
And I just want to bring up real quick, going back to, and I thought about it a little bit further, going back to line, well, actually, page one, line four. And it gets repeated again later, but and elsewhere in the continental United States. My only concern is that you know we have a bill that we have another resolution that's coming up behind us talking about the sovereign states and keeping our sovereign states. I don't know if it's our best interest to start making any type of imposing anything on other states than ourselves. I'm just concerned about when we have this language in there elsewhere in the continental United States that we're exercising control over other states that may have some backlash when Alaska has its interests and you know, for example, opening ANWR, that's an Alaskan issue. I don't like it when people come up with their resolutions against our Alaskan issue. I'm just concerned about us doing the same to other states. So I wanted to bring that up for topic of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. And if we were in opposition to this and if this were anything other than a resolution that the term impose our will in a resolution is wishful thinking. This is a communications to the president asking him to and the other people that are cited here asking them to take into consideration all of this, and I'd certainly not want to send the message that Alaska only cares about itself and not you. So that's kind of my position on it. If we were opposed to it and this was a resolution in opposition to something, then I'd be much more in tune with limiting it to just Alaska, but since this is a broader in support of, each individual state will be able to take that and use it as they wish.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is only a resolution. Thanks for the reminder once again. I just don't want anybody into doing that for us in the future. And if there's no other further discussion, I will go ahead and remove my objection.
Thank you. And Representative Tuck, I will assure you that I will not try to impose my will on any other state from this committee. Representative Gutenberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to continue the discussion, you know, sometimes if we're too successful, we might get what we asked for. I'm not sure that's the case here. I don't know enough about rules and policies and regulations concerning OCS activities, oil and gas, I mean, drilling, pipelines, other exploration things. In the context of doing anything, and I understand, of course, this is just a resolution, but if they did nothing except as far as any policy rule or administrative action, you know, perhaps we're putting, you know, if they follow our advice, we're putting them in a deadlock where they couldn't do any leases. So I don't, you know, there's no resolution addressing that, those things moving forward as fast as possible to do these things. But I'm not going to object to the resolution, but just pointing out, you know, the whereases are all, you know, they're just whereases. The resolves are just, you know, put your head down, barrel straight ahead, you know, whether they're policies or the regulations are in place or not. We don't care, just do it. We have to watch out sometimes what we ask for.
I appreciate, thank you, and I'm fairly clear what I'm asking for. Any other discussion? Representative Newman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I move House Joint Resolution number 28, /E, from committee as amended.
Are there objections?
Any individual recommendations?
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
There was an attached fiscal note.
Attached zero fiscal note? Is there a zero? It is a zero.
Yes, zero. Yes.
And any attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there objections? Hearing none, HJR 28 passes from committee with individual recommendations. I see we have two representatives here today, and I was going to offer the one who was here priority, but since they're both here, I'm going to go in the order that I had them. So we will take HCR 10, Opposed Federal Control of Land and Water.
He doesn't have the right tie on.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out the memo said the 31st.
It did.
It absolutely did. Mr. Representative, would you please state your name and for the committee, please?
Mr. Chairman, I am Representative Mike Hawker, representing District 32, the perimeter regions of the municipality of Anchorage.
Representative, and I understand that we're getting ready to probably break something that we normally don't like to do here, and that's an amendment without 24 hours from the committee, but as this is a resolution and I think it's a fairly simple amendment, would you like for us to go ahead and offer that amendment so we can discuss it during your discussion or wait till afterwards? I would do whatever you wish to do.
Mr. Chairman, I think in the context of this particular bill, that's really more of a technical and clarifying amendment, and it'd be probably just as easy to take it up as after we talk about the main purpose of the legislation.
After you, please go ahead then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I sincerely appreciate the opportunity to bring this legislation forward to you. I'd like to preface this with this piece of legislation really came to my attention in the capacity as a representative of my district, in that a gentleman with great experience in this area brought it to my attention. We ran it through our own process, spent some time discussing, evaluating, looking at what the options were, and we've ended up here before you, so I'm really here representing very, very strong and sincere concerns of individuals in my district. HCR 10 gets, really the meat of it, gets to the state protecting, defending our statehood rights. Through the historic process of statehood and sorting out our the land claims in the state of Alaska, it has been very, very clear that the ownership of submerged lands and navigable waters is guaranteed to the state, and the state has the providence over those navigable waters and submerged lands. Unfortunately, the federal government has consistently tried to usurp those rights from the state of Alaska. While we ourselves as elected representatives of the state of Alaska, it's incumbent upon us to vigorously and passionately defend our land rights and the land claims process of the state of Alaska, in this case from federal government actions that have been infringing upon the right to manage those lands. I would offer, I hope folks got, I believe it was distributed late last weekend, a letter from the State of Alaska Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, the CATFA Commission. It's dated February 13th, 2009. But as it came into our possession, I think it just the first line says it all. And it's addressed from the chairman of the commission to the acting attorney general. And it says, in 1996, over the strong objections of the state of Alaska and others, the National Park Service adopted regulations improperly extended its management and enforcement authorities, et cetera, et cetera. That is the problem, the federal encroachment upon our sovereign right to manage our land resources. State of Alaska for the past dozen years has been sort of chasing some resolutions, and we've certainly continued to pursue our right and claim to the title to submerged waters, navigable waters, and submerged lands. But while we've been trying to chase the title to it, I don't think we've been quite as diligent in protecting our right to those submerged lands and navigable waters. This resolution simply puts out a list of whereases that says, whereas we are right and the federal government is wrong, we ask the governor, and at the moment the bill is stated, to take legal action now to stop this preemption of our rights. And you'll see on the technically correcting amendment, I think we get to a more appropriate request that she take any and all appropriate legal actions, including legal status. But simply, this is a resolution that asks the governor to protect our rights to our resources, and I think it will be extremely timely in that as we have a new attorney general coming into that seat who I believe will be happy to champion this cause.
Thank you. Any questions of the sponsor? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hawker, I just to get to the root of this, I believe there was some problems on the Yukon River submerged lands, the islands basically that are underwater part-time, where people generally have used them to launch a boat from, airplanes, drive a four-wheeler across, and this has come up for a point of contention with the Park Service where citations were issued. Could you kind of expand what caused this?
Before you do, Representative Hawker, we have Tina Cunning and Dick Milius online from DNR and the Division of Mine, Land, and Water to answer any questions. So if you'd like to refer any of your questions to them, Representative, they are also available.
And thank you, Mr.
Hawker.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I would I believe my constituent who brought this to my attention, Mr. Sturgeon, is online, who is the individual who might, in fact, he might even be the best answer. He's, you know, passionately, directly, and personally familiar with those encroachments. As I have brought this forward, having listened to the concerns of Mr. Sturgeon and having that verified, validated by the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, I think those people that have been directly involved might be able to speak better to these specific problems.
Thank you, Representative Hawker, and we have him online to testify, and I think he'll probably go through that during his testimony, so if you can hold on to that question until he is in front of us. Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. You mentioned that their new Attorney General, he'd be most likely wanting to pursue our rights aggressively, and we still see a zero fiscal note. I'm going to rely on you being one of the co-chairs on finance. Are you feeling comfortable with having that zero fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, Representative Tuck, there is a budget allocation inside the Department of Law and an entire section over there operating in the Department of Law that is called Statehood Defense. So we already, on an annual basis, appropriate money for the purpose of this type of activity. We have staff on board that do this sort of work. In fact, if anything, this bill simply it reminds them of how important this is to us and to continue to pursue the work that they're already doing for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions for the sponsor or any of the Tina Cunning or Dick Miles online? With that, we will go to public testimony. Mr. Sturgeon, are you online?
Yes, I am. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, we do. If you'd please state your name, your affiliation, and go ahead with your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. My name is John Sturgeon. I am a 39-year resident of Alaska. In this particular testimony, I'm not sure what my affiliation would be. I guess a sportsman, fisherman, enjoyer of the outdoors. My occupation is I'm a business owner and been in Alaska's forest products industry for the last 39 years. So that's my background.
I think you're testifying on behalf of yourself, then, would be fine.
That is correct.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the chairman sincerely and the committee for listening to my brief comments today. The state of Alaska is incrementally losing one of its most cherished and valuable sovereign rights, the right to manage its navigable waters. Management portions of rivers such as the Yukon River are being taken away by the federal government. The state of Alaska must take strong and decisive action immediately or watch while it loses forever hundreds of miles of rivers, thousands of lakes, and thousands of miles of tideland. Under the Equal Footing Doctrine, the Statehood Act, and the Submerged Land Act, the state assumed ownership at statehood of submerged lands of navigable waters between ordinary high water marks and below mean high tide. The state acquired the full power and control over navigable waters of the state, regardless of the ownership, for watercraft use, mining, recreation, commerce, etc., except for the Congress specifically reduced the state's authority. An example of that would be the Coast Guard when it comes to boating regulations for safety purposes. The state's constitution, statutes, and regulations clearly say the state owns and manages these submerged lands and navigable waters, and its citizens have free and unrestricted access unless restricted under regulations authorized by the state legislature. Alaska's law could not be clearer on this issue. In addition, ANILCA under Section 103C states that regulations adopted for national parks only apply to the federal lands and not state or private lands within those designated areas. And navigable waters are considered lands, state lands within those ANILCA designated areas. Beginning in 1996, the National Park Service placed another layer of regulation over the state of Alaska's management on these navigable waters. A few of the examples that I personally know about on the Yukon River are as follows. They are enforcing national prohibitions on the use of certain types of watercraft that the state has authorized on the Yukon River. They have cited, they will cite placer miners with legitimate permits from the state, whether it be recreational or commercial, even if they're fully permitted by the state, and they're doing that on state submerged lands. They are requiring commercial operators of river boats and dog mushing tours to secure federal permits. There's a dog musher out of Eagle that goes from private land to private land along the Yukon River and never touches the uplands, and they're still requiring that business to receive a federal permit. That person has been fighting, has not complied, and they're threatening the site that that business. They have prohibited the use of four-wheelers on gravel bars on the Yukon River. And finally, they told me this last year during a stop on the Yukon River that they're going to start testing motorized watercraft for decibel levels to assure they do not exceed their limits. So, for example, something like an airboat, which is authorized now, if they had went over a certain decibel level, or a boat went over a certain decibel level, they also would be banned on the Yukon River out of Eagle. On other rivers in the state, the National Park Service is restricting the method and means used by sport and subsistence fishermen. Each year, they become more and more emboldened, and the restrictions on the use of the state's navigable waters continue to grow. The National Park Service actions, in effect, is voiding the state's legitimate jurisdiction on the state's navigable waters. I urge your help in immediately halting the federal government from taking the state of Alaska's right to manage its navigable waters by passing HCR 10. This should be done quickly, since every day the state of Alaska loses more and more of its management authority on navigable waterways, and therefore Alaskans lose one of their most cherished rights, the ability to freely use our state-controlled navigable waters for hunting, fishing, boating, general recreation, and many other commercial ventures. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, John. Any questions for Mr. Sturgeon? Thank you. I appreciate your time. Ron Arnold, are you available?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chairman Johnson and Representative Newman. My name is Rod Arno. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, which, as you know, is a statewide organization. We represent 2,500 individual members and 48 clubs for a total membership of 10,000 Alaskans statewide. And I like the analogy of that a resolution is only a wish, but we've been down so long on this, a wish looks good to us. Since 1996, when the National Park Service went ahead and figured this was simply a clarification of a prior law and attempted to go ahead and use this regulation to further restrict access in Alaska, it's happened over and over again in numerous areas of the state. And unfortunately, there are as many times as I've, in testimony and in writing for the Outdoor Council, have tried to explain Alaska is a different, unique area due to its lack of infrastructure of interstate roads or development of secondary roads. This access on these navigable waters is extremely important to all Alaskans, and particularly to our membership in the Outdoor Council. So I applaud Representative Hawker for going ahead and listening to his constituent and putting this resolution together, and I'll be happy if this wish ever comes to fruition. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Rod. Any questions of Mr. Arno? Scott, I know you're online, and just pipe in if you've got any questions. You're going to have to interrupt me because I don't want to forget about you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Stan Leppard, are you available? And you've got a constituent coming up, Scott, so...
I'm sitting right here in front of him.
Excellent. Okay, so you guys have already got this going. Stan, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Stan Leppard. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. As you know, we're a state commission that's charged with determining the impact of federal management agency actions, regulations, and management decisions on the citizens of the state of Alaska. And within that context, we heard from Mr. Sturgeon, who so very well explained his position concerns at our November meeting. And as a result of that testimony, or his testimony at our meeting and some subsequent work with some of the other state agencies, we decided that consistent with our responsibilities, we should recommend to the Attorney General's office and to the governor that the state take whatever necessary action to resolve this issue that was available. Now, one of our main concerns is, I think as Rod pointed out, the vital nature of access along the waterways of Alaska for a multitude of uses, for their subsistence, for their recreation, for guided hunting, for any number of things. And Anoka has some very specific languages that allows access to rivers and lakes. And of course, as Mr. Sturgeon pointed out, the state's authority to regulate its waters are not to be impeded by the language or the provisions of Anoka. Or do we believe they should be impeded by the regulations of the National Park Service? Now, what our concern is that although the National Park Service has been pretty constrained so far, I think, in enforcing these regulations, even in the 12 years since they've been promulgated, I think that there's evidence that may be changing. As Mr. Sturgeon pointed out, there have been increasing number of contacts between National Park Service rangers and users of park areas with regard to possible restrictions on their use and types of watercraft and those sorts of things. So our concern is that we may have a situation facing us where citizens of the state who are engaged in otherwise lawful activities that are allowed and provided for under state law and regulation could be cited under regulations of the National Park Service. So I think you have before you our letter to the Attorney General. It's pretty straightforward. We may try to make the case, hopefully, that these regulations were not properly implemented. Well, they were properly implemented. Let me rephrase that. They improperly extend the agency's authority over what are state-owned lands and waters within national park units. And again, as Mr. Sturgeon pointed out, Section 103C makes it pretty clear that these sorts of regulations are not to extend to state-owned or non-federal lands within national park units or national wildlife refuges, those sorts of areas. And then one final concern I think that we have is that at this point we have regulations that have been promulgated by the National Park Service, but we have tens of millions more acres of lands within national wildlife refuges, within national forests, within wild and scenic river areas, that those agencies do not have similar regulations. Our concern is that if these regulations are allowed to stand, then those other federal land management agencies may also move to promulgate regulations to implement these same sort of restrictions. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just say we do support House Resolution 10. I should point out, I guess, when we first voted to send this letter at our February meeting, there was a resolution, SCR 3, I believe, that would accomplish the same thing, and that's referred to in our letter, but I'm certain that our membership would have full support for the intentions behind HCR 10. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude and answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Stan. Any questions of Stan? Thank you. Is there anyone else online to testify? Is there anyone else in the room?
Kenai, moderator.
I'm sorry? What? Where were you? Kenai?
Kenai, correct.
Okay, and you have someone to testify?
We do, sir.
Okay, would you please state your name for the record and who you represent, if anyone?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Hammond, and I support here representing myself. I'm a lifelong Alaskan of 48 years, and I think it's time that we push back and start asserting our rights as Alaskans. I strongly agree with all the testimony that I've heard today, and strongly suggest that we move this forward and start protecting our rights. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I had you to testify on 27 state sovereign powers of the state. So if you want to testify on that as well, if you'd stick around, I'd appreciate it. Like I said, this is statehood day, so we're kind of exerting our rights. Is there anyone else online who'd like to testify? Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? Hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony on HCR 10. That brings the bill before us. Representative Newman, do you have something for us today?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to propose an amendment to House Concurrent Resolution Number 10, that being on page 2, line 17, following by the state, delete issuing citations to placer miners that have valid state permits, and on page 2, line 25, following the governor 2, delete file suit against the United States Department of the Interior, National Park Service, and insert pursue all available legal options. And there should be a copy of that amendment before all members.
Are there objections for the purpose of discussion? Representative Seaton?
I'll object.
Okay, there is an objection. Representative Olson?
I had the same objection.
Okay.
For the same reason.
No, well, I had to at least get it moved before we objected.
Plus two objections.
There are two objections, and there's a third objection for the purpose of discussion. Representative Seaton, you want to start?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment, and that would be to delete on page 1, line 1, the words file and action, and to insert the wording of the amendment on page 7, pursue all legal options.
Thank you. And that is an amendment, Amendment 1 to Amendment 1?
That's correct.
Are there objections to Amendment 1 to Amendment 1? Hearing none, Amendment 1 to Amendment 1 is adopted, which brings the original amendment before us. Do you still maintain your objections, Representative Seaton?
Just on the question that this is being offered as a conceptual amendment, is that correct?
That is my understanding. I'm not sure that Representative Newman stated it as such, but I will, for the record, state that Amendment 1 is a conceptual amendment.
And I'll remove my objection.
Representative Olson, I believe you also objected.
I'll remove mine.
So both objections have been amended. Representative Guttenberg has withdrawn his. Representative Tuck, I don't believe you had one.
Nope.
Okay. So are there any additional amendments to Amendment Number 1 as amended? Hearing and seeing one, amended number one is passed. That brings the bill before us for discussion. Is there any committee discussion? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think some of the comments that we heard here today on this bill were in the time frame short and narrow, especially when it relates to what's going on the Park Service is doing on the more northern end of the Yukon River in Alaska. And there's a dear friend to myself and Representative Kelly who wrote a phenomenal book on his experience in that part of the river and what the Park Service's long-term goal is actually to do, and that is to eliminate any human habitats in that area. And there are people that have been there since, you know, Gold Rush. People first came up here looking for gold and furs, and you know, there's a historic presence. And unfortunately, the Park Service is trying to eliminate that entire lifestyle up on that river. And I think traditionally that has been a very important part of Alaskan's heritage. So this resolution, you know, kind of throwing the ball a little bit too far inside to back them off the plate, I think is appropriate.
Thank you, and I'm not sure that a beaning to the head might not be appropriate too, but that's just a little different resolution, I think. Any other discussion on HCR 10? Hearing and seeing none, what would be the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution Number 10, /A, as amended, with any individual recommendations or fiscal notes.
We have a movement of HCR 10. Are there objections? Hearing and seeing none, HCR 10 passes from committee. Congratulations, and thank you, Representative Hawker, for doing this. It is important to all of us.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for your time today. Very, very sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you for participating in Alaska Day.
Thank you much.
Continue with the theme.
We just want to be sure that our incoming Attorney General has something to do when he gets on the job.
He will be a busy person. Thank you. Before us now, we have HDR 27. Once again, continue with our theme. Representative Kelly, I see in the audience. Thank you for attending. If you would state your name for the record and proceed at your will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I was a co-sponsor on that last bill, and like you say, it's kind of a turn our people loose day. So, continuing on that theme, I'll try to be very brief since the issue will resonate with the previous conversation. Mr. Chairman, you first saw this, and some of you co-sponsored it as H.R. 9, and that is the sovereignty bill. And the bill is, the content of the bill is the same. That'll make it easy for you to fill out one of those green slips for me again. And we're always learning down here, and one thing I learned along the trail here was that this one probably should become a joint resolution rather than a simple resolution. And we have accomplished that. And I see a couple of you nodding, and I had talked to some folks that will be happy with this. Makes it more formal, and so we've dialed up the formality of it a little. So keep in mind that this is there have been no changes made from that. The federal government's encroachment on states' rights, as you heard in the previous presentation, seems to be dialing up. And that's not just an Alaskan saying that, but the National Conference of State Legislatures says that the volume of federal legislation that preempts state authority has increased, and pressure continues to mount for Congress and the White House to support federal usurpation of state authority in a variety of areas, such as criminal law, tort reform, driver's license security, the environment. We know here in Alaska that right to manage our own fish and game, the waters that we travel in, and even the RS-2477 took a nasty little turn that some of you may not have noticed on our right to access, and that is that before, it's always been upside down because in the act or in the law, it recognized our right. Well, when you have a recognized right, that means it's mine, and you're recognizing it, and the federal government did that. But they fought us every lousy inch of the trail on every one of those rights away. So we've got that has changed in that now they've taken away the federal funds that they used to allow us to actually fight the fight for our own access. So if you've got enough brain damage to get your arms around that, you'll be right where I am. And so this resolution could have been more strident, and would have made several of my constituents happy. And in fact, the fact that we haven't got the most strident version is a concern to some. And yet, let me tell you where the reason for that. In some of the states where they've used the most strident language, they've had failure, blowouts along the way. People weren't ready for the most strident language, like secession-type language. So you won't see that in here, even though that's you can tell that probably I'm getting close to where I might be in favor of dialing that up or changing that. But we've chosen a method of communication and content less shrill than that desired by some folks out there. And as respectful people, we begin this conversation, that is the formal conversation asserting our sovereignty, by stating our requests and our demands. And I can tell you that if we don't receive more favorable treatment, I'll be among those out leading the front edge of the pack to make this more our actions more strident and to dial up the heat on this. So for those that are concerned about the gentlemanliness of the language, that'll tell you why we got here from a guy that you might expect would have been right on the front of the pack for the tougher language. Four states have passed sovereignty bills. 22 states have introduced legislation, and it is estimated that about 12 will be, Alaska among them, I'm hopeful, will be among those who will pass legislation this year. So by the end of the year, it's hoped that there will be another six, that there will be 16 states all in on this type of language. And I think it's three states that are more strident in this area. So there, while some have rejected the stridency, others have embraced it. And Oklahoma, I think, is New Hampshire, though, had a blowout on there. Anyway, suffice it to say, some folks have taken the stronger language. Some have tried it and failed. We didn't want this to fail. The Constitution was written under the principle of what is called positive grant. And what this means is simply that the federal government is authorized to exercise only those powers which are positively granted to it by the Constitution. If a power is specifically listed in the Constitution, they have it. If it's not listed, they do not have it because it was not positively granted. The language of the 10th Amendment is clear and it's concise. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Thus, the federal government's powers are limited to a set of specific activities. If the Congress had been formed and empowered to approve and implement and promote the general welfare, that then this there would be no point in making these specifics. It would say do whatever you need to do to promote the general welfare. That's not in Article 1, Section 8, and you all know that. We must keep in mind that the founders envisioned a confederation of states, not a one-size-fits-all solution for every kind of a problem that the states bumped into. They'd just come through that sort of tyranny, and they were trying to get away from it. And that's why the Constitution is so specific in this area. We agree with the historian Guzman, who said that those who would give us a living Constitution, that is one that's changeable based on the people hanging around at the time, are actually giving us not a living Constitution, but a dead one, because such a thing is completely unable to protect us against the encroachments of the ever-amending government. So, Mr. Chairman, I think you get the point. This is a sovereignty amendment. It states our intention that we are dead serious and hereby appropriate all those rights that were meant to be ours, and we state that clearly. And I think at that point I'll just dog it off and see if you've got any questions.
Representative Newman.
And I should introduce myself, Representative Mike Kelly, District 7, and my staffer, Derek Miller. I failed to do that, Mr. Chairman, for the record.
We were wondering who you were.
I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of us refer to him as Mudslide Kelly. Representative Kelly, you know, it's interesting that you're coming up with some of this, because when I think back of DOT, and we've got a highway, section of highway in my district where the cost of improving 9 miles of road is double because of what the federal government has to stick their nose in there instead of the state just doing it. Unfortunately, we don't have $130 million to do 9 miles. We've got little carrots that have been hung out in front of us for years. One that I think that both you and I voted against at the time was the seatbelt law. You know, we'll give you a little bit of money for a year or so, but you're going to enforce our will on the people. Now we have nearly $1 billion in stimulus money is coming down the same way. You know, that's going to stay. Here's a little bit of money, take it, and then, you know, you're going to have to pick up these programs. We have No Child Left Behind, some of the educational things that aren't attached to money. The list goes on and on and on. We could discuss this for a long time. I'm assuming that's the gist of where you're going on this. Is that, I mean, those are some of the bigger things that the federal government has told us what we're going to do with a carrot.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Newman, precisely so. And it is broad enough to encompass all of those areas. Representative Guttenberg mentioned Dan O'Neill's book, Land Gone Lonesome. And if you haven't read it, it's a good read, and talks about the fact that while he, as a pretty much an environmentalist, was very concerned about the bulldozer mentality of Alaska, he said one of the points in the book was that if I know, maybe I'll change course here.
You're talking about going sideways here now.
Yeah, but anyway, Dan O'Neill was right on one thing, and that was that they emptied that river, and that was their intent to do so, and they were successful. So I think that his point was on that the only thing worse than the bulldozer mentality as far as its impact on Alaska was the National Park Service loving the Yukon to death. Nobody's there. So yes, Representative Newman, in all these things, from management of our fish and game to access to our own navigable waters. I mean, I know how that touches down on the ground in the Yukon, and folks like Alex Tarnay and Mike Johnson trapping north of the Yukon. These are real people that have had their lives interrupted. And those folks out there don't have an advocate when that guy with the 9mm comes up. They don't have an advocate, and believe me, that I'd like to see that turned around. That's why CACFA, you know, we got that back through, and thanks to this group. Anyway, we'll stop there.
We're not talking gun control. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. You mentioned Dan, and you quoted the book. I wasn't going to do that, but thank you. It's really an interesting place where I think a lot of Alaskans find themselves on common ground. But I just want to point out for you something that happens on the fifth floor, that it's the difference between intent and what you actually mean. It's Seward's Day, not the 31st. Those of us in this committee understand it's Seward's Day, whatever number it falls out on, and we appreciate your understanding that. This committee is it's clear on that.
It's officially Alaska Day in the Resources Committee.
I think what he said, Mr. Chairman, is Kelly's got the right time.
Kelly's got the right time. Is there any other questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Tuck?
Actually, no, I'll save it for comments. Thank okay. you.
Thank you. And with that, I would like to go to public testimony. Jim Floyd in Tok, are you available?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you'd state your name and who you represent, if anyone, for the record, and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, sir. My name is James Floyd. I'm from Tok, and I speak for myself and possibly on behalf of a lot of other people who seem to know what's going on. I'd just like to say that I applaud Representative Mike Kelly's efforts, and obviously he's aware of a lot of things that are going on. I'd like to just sort of add that this is merely a resolution. A lot of other states have worked this. And plan, if there's any more specific things to point out or say, that they can always follow through with an act. In a time, there's a lot of citizen concerns happening right now concerning the federal government. There's an impression that they're beyond their scope of power, what they're supposed to do. There's concerns about federalization of police, compulsory service, restrictions on firearms. People are getting a little bit concerned over a lot of the overreach, but I'd like to point out that a lot of people, and myself included, only recently kind of learned that a lot of people don't know that the states actually entered a contract with each other called the U.S. Constitution, and that contract created the federal government to begin with. So it actually, it's the states that actually have the authority and have the power. I'd also like to point out that since the 90s, I believe Representative Kelly mentioned up to 38 states doing something about that. I'd like to mention that there's at least 47 state legislatures involved with this type of 10th Amendment resolution. If I have time here, I'd like to read some of the statements or quotes from other representatives from other states around the country. The first comes from Oregon State Rep. Dennis Richardson on the 9th of this month. He mentioned the idea of national ID cards, continuing redeployments of the National Guard to foreign lands to fight foreign wars. His statement is, we need to help assure that the federal government understands that they're given enumerated rights and that the rights that they are not specifically given remain with the states and with the people. That's what the 10th Amendment guarantees. Another quote, Oklahoma State Senator Brogdon on the 25th of February stated, just because we are a part of the United States does not mean that as a state or as a people we are subjects to the federal government. Today, Congress is the biggest bunch of overreachers and underachievers I have ever seen in my entire life. What this Congress is involved with is devastating to us as a nation. It is devastating to us as a free people. He continues, I am convinced without any shadow of a doubt, we can take our nation back, but it will be done at the state level, state by state. We must regain our sovereignty. We must re-implement the freedom and the liberty that our founding fathers gave us. New Hampshire State Rep. Dan Itzy stated on the 13th of February, it's time to stop bribing me with my own money. This is like parents who created a child known as the general government and left discipline for so long that it has become an incorrigible child. And it's time for the parents to take the child to the woodshed. These are just statements and ideas that are happening nationwide. This is a very big idea and a very big movement. And I thank you for the opportunity to give you input into the state legislature and your decisions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Floyd? Seeing none, we have Scott Hammond in Kenai. Scott, are you available?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I understand, I suppose, the need to tone it down a little bit and maybe make it easier to get through the legislature, but frankly, I think the time for being nice has passed. We've been nice for a long time, and it was said earlier today on one of the other bills that this is just a wish, and I think we need to go beyond a wish. We need to be very forceful, and in fact, I think we need to go beyond that and put some peace, some teeth in one of these pieces of legislation. You know, we collect a lot of monies in this state that gets sent off to the federal government, and I think we need to start collecting them in this state and holding them here basically hostage to the federal government to make sure that they do what they need to do or we're not going to send them the money. We collect revenues on oil, on gas at the pump that we send off, on fishing and hunting licenses, all kinds of things. And I know Alaska is a recipient state, and maybe it's time we stand up and pay some of our own bills a little bit more if that's what it takes. But the bottom line is I don't think the federal government's going to be receptive to anything unless we start fighting back, and we need to start doing it now, put some teeth in this thing, and let's get after it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any questions? Scott? Thank you. Rod Arno, are you available to testify?
Yep, still here.
Excellent, Rod. Please state your name for the record.
All right. My name's Rod Arno. Live in Palmer, Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. Again, thanks to the Resource Committee for hearing us out on this. Unfortunately, I'm in the camp of that this isn't strident enough. Having been the person that's been beat up in meetings as a representative of the Alaska Outdoor Council and sitting on CACFA as being appointed by the Senate, I have seen over and over again a loss of access, a loss of fish and game management, and a loss of fish and game allocations because of federal encroachment. So I applaud the legislature, you know, for looking. If they make this a joint resolution, that would be great, and pass it out, and we'll see what we can do, and we'll keep the wish alive. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Any questions of Rod? Is there anyone else online who'd like to testify? I'd like to thank you guys for sticking with us today. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? Hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony on HJR 27. Committee discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess to the sponsor, on page 2, starting in line 17, the further resolve, it all seems to be very pointed to me where it's, you know, further resolved that all compulsory federal legislation that directs states to comply under threat of civil or criminal penalties, sanctioned, or requires state to pass legislation. But then we have the other or, which is or lose federal funding, be prohibited or repealed. And it seems like what we're doing is we're just saying, give us some money, but don't tell us what to do with it at all. And it seems like it loses some of the, it gets into a totally different area of saying we want everything as a block grant, we don't want to be, but we want the money. And I'm wondering whether you agree that that kind of diminishes the forcefulness of this resolution, having those four words or lose federal funding in there. and whether you would consider removing those and having it as a direct talking about mandates.
Representative Kelly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Seaton, we had a lot of discussion about that when we were toning the bill down a little bit, hoping to recognize the politics down here and try to make sure that this got through and didn't hang over and die a slow death somewhere and actually set us back, because the message would be they couldn't even pull off a polite version here in the new Alaska. So I thought about that. I think it's very important to have it. And the reason it's important is that that is one of the, I'll call it a, one of the ways that they enforce their inappropriate overreach, in my opinion. And it is very consistent. Now, the fact that we, because they've taken 250 million acres of productive land completely off the table, won't keep their promise on ANWR and stick it to us every damn time they can. Excuse me, every time, Mr. Chairman. I haven't done that a single time this year, and if you wipe that off, I'll
wipe what off?
Yeah, what off? Wonderful, Mr. Chairman. Every time they get a chance, they take away from us, and then I'm supposed to be embarrassed about saying that they shouldn't use money to make us feel better. It's like knocking a guy down and then helping him back up. It doesn't work for me. And so we thought about that, and I clearly understand what you're saying, and it's going to make it a little bit of a problem for some people. But when you look at the record and as the sponsor of the CACFA legislation originally, we put them in place, and we're fortunate enough to get Stan Liepart back to help people with this. But they make it at the end of the day so that too many of us are okay with the whipping we get. And that's this says, even your money area is not right. It's not right that our money, not their money, because they don't have any, that our money that they send to Alaska is used to force us to break our own 10th Amendment rights. So I think the distinction is that this bill isn't basically about money. It's about the rights that we have as a state. And this warns them not to, in an attempt to order us around, say, well, we're going to tell you to do something that we shouldn't be telling you to do, but we're going to make you okay for it, sucker, by giving you some money for it. So I thought about that, and I understand right where you're coming from, but I'd like to, if the committee will do it, I'd sure like to leave it in there.
Representative Seaton, if I might, I sit in budget subcommittee after budget subcommittee after budget subcommittee where we were replacing public or federal funds. And most of those funds came with this kind of stipulation that, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to lose it, so here's your money for seat belts or helmets or whatever it is. And all of a sudden that money disappears and we're left holding the bag, as it were, making a determination whether we continue that program. And this is just a funded, pre-funded, unfunded mandate, if that makes sense, in my opinion. So I'm perfectly comfortable, and I too might fall on the side of this may not be strong enough. So I would encourage us not to, you do as you wish, but I would encourage us not to soften this any more than I think it's already been done by the sponsor.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Seaton.
I was not attempting to soften it. I was afraid that by having it come down to, what we're really talking about is getting federal money, that we're softening it, whereas the 10th Amendment are direct legal arguments. And then these last few words in there, I see as softening it, because the therefore, you know, what we're resolving is, keep us giving us the money, and we're not talking about don't have criminal or, you know, don't have a violation of law or don't force us to pass laws or those kind of things. So I'm definitely not trying to soften this, and I'm fine with the sponsor if he wants to keep it in. That's why I asked the question.
Thank you for that clarification. And the way I read that, it basically requires a state to pass legislation or lose federal funding, so that it's you can't go get the money unless you pass a law, and that's kind of the way I was reading that, maybe a little differently. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, you know, Representative Kelly, I'd be happy if you had another, be it resolved, that the state of Alaska would go back and look at all those carrots we took and see what we want to give back to get a little bit more of our freedom back. I mean, I would go stronger on this if I were you, because again, some of the things that we've done for carrots that are hung out there in front of us, and look and see the effect and get all these little fires started all over the place and then walk away from them. You know, we ended up backloading as the co-chair.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Newman. Thought about doing that. I'm a co-sponsor of the previous bill that Representative Hawker put in. And that names a specific violation, calls it out, and then asks specifically for the governor to put the money in to take care of that. I think we'll gain ground, not lose it, by going through and finding out which one of these several of us are willing to stick our names on. And that was just number one. I mean, the next one, our fish and game. I mean, absolutely silly. And so I'm ready to start making the list. I just think that we should make that list and direct specific action. And then if we don't get some action, then we'll talk about the next step. What are we going to do, you know? And that seems to me, we've had quite a bit of time to think about this, because we went back and re-upped it as the most strong message you can send as far as messages goes. Now, you can put an act in, as many people have said, a bill, and state that, and if you do this, we're going to meet at the corner, you know, Cushman and Second, and start doing something. And we didn't do that. This doesn't threaten them on the first thing. I believe in the 1-2-3 whack, not the whack 1-2-3. And so, anyway.
I think it's the kindler, gentler Representative Kelly.
Yes.
Since when?
Any other questions regarding this? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate what Representative Seaton brought up, because that one resolve, it looks like it almost stands by itself, or lose federal funding, be prohibited or repealed. So under discussions, I'm going to offer an amendment, but I wanted to ask the sponsor real quick before I suggest it, if he would be okay just adding a couple commas, just to clarify.
That's exactly what I did, just so it says. So, and I don't know if he wants to do that or not, but
And my suggested locations would be after penalties and then after or sanctions on line 18, page 2. So it would read, comply under threat of civil or criminal penalties, comma, because both of those go together, or sanctions, comma, or requires states to pass legislation or lose federal funding, be prohibited or repealed.
Mr. Chairman, if I might look at this.
Representative Kelly, if you need a second to look at that. And we will stay on the records, just so that everyone knows that we're not. He's a fairly quick study.
Don't you wish we'd have paid closer attention in grammar class?
I actually had the same thing, so I must have been there that day. Representative Seaton, in the meantime,
for Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, so Representative Tuck, then your amendment would have a threat of civil or criminal penalties is one thought, sanctions is another thought, and the third thought would be requires states to pass legislation or lose federal funding.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
Just keep those thoughts separate, because it almost looks like there's another additional thought there, which
continue
brought it up. Yeah.
I don't think it changes the substance or the meaning in any form or fashion. It just breaks it out.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seaton.
And that does also get to the problem that I was having of, you know, just talking about money. This is pass legislation or lose funding.
Right.
And that was your thought, and I think that that's consistent with where takes care of the problem that I was expressing earlier.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we're on the fly here, but I think that I would not have an objection to that. And if something comes up where it strangles the meaning in some fashion that I'm not seeing right now, it's got another place where we can fix it on the floor. So if it does violence in any way, I reserve the right to come back at you. But I don't have any objection to what Representative Tuck has suggested.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. So if we would offer that as conceptual amendment number one as a cleanup. So that maybe the legal can work with the sponsor, and if it turns out to be, there are several things we can do if you want to work with it before we get the CS and advance it. So if you'd offer that as a conceptual amendment, would you like to restate that, please, for the record?
Sure. For the record, I'd like to offer amendment, which would be amendment number one, changing page 2, line 18, that we add, after comply under threat of civil or criminal penalties, a comma, and then another comma after or sanctions.
Does everyone understand that amendment? Are there objections to that amendment? Hearing none, conceptual amendment number one has passed. Is there any other discussion? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Serving on the Anchorage School District School Board as treasurer, one of the things that we were faced with is that mandate of No Child Left Behind. And we had many discussions on whether or not it would be better for us, because of those constrictions, those restrictions, however you want to look at it, those challenges, to potentially remove ourselves of all federal funding just so we can get out of underneath that mandate. And so, unfortunately, when we went through that process, we had to look at it as rather than an unfunded mandate, more as an underfunded mandate, because we would have lost so much had we had been able to do that. And unfortunately, you know, it did put a burden on us. We do receive about a third of our economy is from the federal government. However, I think that there are times that you have to flex and you have to remind authorities of our rights. And in no way do I want to be misconstrued as being a secessionist, but there are times when we do have to flex our muscles. And I just hope that with all that being said, that with all the other Alaska, or actually Seward's Day resolutions that we've seen before us today, that we do have enough money in that statehood defense fund to cover these resolutions and to move forward and to protect Alaska's best interests. And so and I'd like to go on record one other further item, and I do oppose Real ID as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Tuck, you're dangerously close to needing to change your party affiliation. I do appreciate that a lot. Representative Kelly, I did have one other comment. In who we send this to, and this may go counter to some of the things we discussed earlier, would it be beneficial in your mind to send this to the other governors of the 50 states, just to let them know that we're also in the game and in the mix, and just add in the copies, very simple, other governors of the other 50 states?
Mr. Chairman, that's absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you.
And I think we got a call from, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kelly.
We got a call from folks in Pennsylvania who were putting together their 10th Amendment rally and points and stuff. So they bled us pretty dry on what we were doing here and seemed very pleased with it. So letting them know, and I got to cut this off, I know, letting them know is a good idea.
Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, I presume you're going to make that as an amendment. Are we sending that to the other legislatures or the governor?
I would, my intention was governor, but I have no problem with it going to legislators of the other 50 states and governors. I have no problem with that.
As long as, Mr. Chairman, as I don't pick up a fiscal note.
No, because we've actually covered that in this committee several times, because we can do it electronically, and there is no cost to that. So we've been down that rabbit trail and come up with it not needing a fiscal note. With that, I would make conceptual amendment number two, which would send copies to the governors and heads of the legislature, both bodies, with the exception of Nebraska, which only has one, and to have that copy of this resolution go to them as well. Are there objections? You sure? Hearing none. Amendment, conceptual amendment number 2 has passed. Is there any other discussion to come before the committee? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Although the resolution, the commas in the last resolve, I think delineate a little bit stronger the points that are made in the resolution. I am concerned that the last part of that line, the last part of 18 and 19, is kind of tweaks it into a place that does weaken it considerably, because we have no control over spin outside this building or even inside this building. But we want the money, and we don't want the the rules of what or why you're giving it to us to apply to us. I think that is a diminishment of the resolution.
Representative Guttenberg, I'm not sure that I agree. I think it just separates it out and more clearly defines it. You and I probably don't agree on that much anyway. So I appreciate your comments, Representative Tuck.
I understand what Representative Guttenberg, thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at that a little closer, I kind of saw that as either pass legislation or lose the funding as a kind of a forced hand or a arm twisting procedure. But if you were to say, in reading it without the commas, and let's say we added a comma after 19 legislation. So they would read separate, that all compulsory federal legislation that directs states to comply or require states to pass legislation or lose federal funding be approved or repealed. I see where it could be confusing. I can also see where it could possibly diminish. But I was looking at those last two concepts as being one concept, rather than two separate ones. So, but I can see on the other hand how you can say just lose federal funding, be prohibited or repealed, period, all by itself. Does that make any sense? I don't know if I'm making any sense.
It may make perfect sense, but does it make sense enough for you to put it in the form of an amendment at this point? And my guess is, If I might make a suggestion, we've had the sponsor agree to work with the verbiage, work with legal to make sure it's wrapped around properly. There is a very clear public record of what the committee, I think, is looking for. And instead of amending your amendment or withdrawing your amendment, I'd like to see this advance like is with the sponsor's knowledge that if it comes back and the CS is not appropriate, we could bring this up on Friday or send it to the next committee, whichever we chose to do. But I think we want to go ahead and move it on and get it out after we've seen the CS.
And one further quick comment, Mr. Chair, is that it doesn't look like any of us are looking to lessen it, just to help it out.
Right. And I appreciate it. And I think one of the things, and I'm real hard, and I was joking with my good friend from Fairbanks about us agreeing. I think today we've agreed on an awful lot. I think this is very important. Everything we did.
You're
today.
You're going to change your party?
No, I'm going to change. We don't go that far.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Tuck.
And if I may, I just want to say there's more than one reason to be a Republican. I want to remind everybody there's also more than one reason to be a Democrat.
That's absolutely true.
And many times we blend.
And we can get along very well. But before, Representative Newman, were you wanting to?
Yeah.
Say, go ahead.
Well, I like it the way it is. You know, I kind of think that sends a stronger message, too, that we need to look at the carrots that we take. But, you know, this Representative Kelly can request to go to rules, too. I like to see these go out of, you know, resources personally. Right. And if they need to get changed, we can look at it in the rules committee right before it comes on the floor.
And Representative Newman, as a conceptual amendment, I was meaning to look at it before we advanced it, to take one more look at it, not to hold it up in any form or fashion. That was not my intention. I think that the legislation or the resolutions that we passed today are very important to the state of Alaska. I think these resolutions reflect why many of us came here and why most of us stayed. Every chance we get, we need to flex our muscle. We're a long way from Washington. I think that these kinds of resolutions are important. And having said that, maybe that's the last word. If I don't see anybody's hands go up, I would entertain the will of the committee. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Resolution number 27/A as amended with any conceptual amendments or individual suggestions and attached fiscal notes from committee.
It has been moved. Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, HJR 27 has passed the Resources Committee, soon to be the floor, I hope. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, just for the record, that was a zero fiscal note?
Zero fiscal note, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Thanks, everyone, for your indulgence. Thank you, Representative Kelly. I appreciate it. With that, we are adjourned at 7 minutes till 3:00.